This July, we celebrate the birth of our nation and remember the heroes who fought for our freedoms. But did you know there are Americans today who don't have the freedom of life and liberty? Every day, unborn babies' very lives are under attack. But because of preborn, we can rescue them.
I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Ultrasounds save lives. And when you save a life at a preborn network clinic, you often save a soul, as over 85,000 women have come to know Christ. To learn more about preborn's life-saving work, call #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Appreciate you joining me today, and we'll get to some headlines in just a second. I just got to tell you, praise the Lord, we had a great Commissioner's Court meeting this morning for our Constitution City effort. Those of you that haven't heard anything about this, I'm proud to say that Patriot Academy is forming the newest city in Texas with a real focus on teaching civics and the Constitution. And today we had a very important meeting at the County Commissioner's to have the election ordered for this November, and then the people within our, you'll enjoy this, I think in this audience you'll get this, 177.6 acre city. Yes, that's right, 177.6 acres, 1776. That is the boundaries of Constitution City. It's going to be an official Type C municipality, an official city in Texas, and it'll be the place that people come from all over to study the Constitution. How about that? Studying the Constitution in Constitution City, Texas. That's right. Imagine sitting in Independence Hall when we get that built in Constitution City. It's going to be cool. Anyway, just to praise the Lord to share with you that things went really well at the Commissioner's Court this morning. I had some opposition. Definitely, you know, there's always some people going to be against everything, and definitely when you're a biblically based, constitutionally sound organization, there are people out there that do not like us. And, of course, we get some of that hate mail, but sometimes they come out of the woodwork, even in conservative areas of the country. And so we had some of that, but nothing that, of course, could not be overcome. So anyway, big victory for us here at the Patriot Academy campus. Looking forward to sharing more of that with you in future programming. But also make sure you're following me on social media because we're updating that every few days on the progress of the city. And you can do that at Facebook or X, or now we're also broadcasting the Tavern on YouTube. If you want to go there, I give a weekly update about what's going on here at the campus. Speaking of which, I'm really excited about the people that are here right now. We had a whole group, new group show up Sunday night. And for those of you out there that you know, you're really concerned that there aren't enough good candidates, which I believe me, I think about that as well. We have a chamber full right now of military veterans and Constitution coaches from across the country. And these are people that have served in the military. Some of them, you know, career. Some of them, you know, did a 4-year or 6-year or 8-year stint. But they get it. They understand when they get done with our program. They always come up to me and say, "Now I know what I was fighting for." There's something about a military veteran going through a mock legislative session where they really see the intricate work of a constitutional republic, and they realize the American system really is special. It really is unique, and there's a reason that our system works the way that it does, and the spreading the power out to as many hands as possible, not just at the horizontal level where you have a judiciary and a legislative and executive branch, but also vertically between the feds and the state and the local and the family and the church and all these different jurisdictions. And so this is one of my favorite weeks of the year is watching these military veterans, the light bulbs coming on, and the appreciation from our staff and from the Constitution coaches and others that aren't military veterans that are helping to put this on, the appreciation for knowing we wouldn't have a Constitution City. We wouldn't have all these Constitution classes and Patriot Academy and our legislative simulation and all the things we do if it was not for the military veterans willing to defend our freedom, willing to defend our way of life, willing to, in most cases, give up some of the best years of their life in those late teens and early 20s and go around the world and literally be not just be willing to lay down their life. Even if you survive and you don't lay down your life, you are actually giving of your life. You're giving of those years of your life and being away from your family and all the things that it takes. And the family gives. That's the other thing that we don't thank these people enough is the spouse and the kids and the people that sacrifice all throughout the family, the mom and dad that were. I mean, it's a family affair when someone serves in the military. And so anyway, I'm really enjoying this week, and I had a chance to train yesterday, and then we'll be doing some more Constitution training tonight, and they'll be doing their legislative simulation. And I'm just telling you, folks, be encouraged. I told you that week before last when we had all the kiddos here. We had the 16 to 25-year-olds doing the legislative simulation. But to turn around this week now and have the chamber full again, but this time with military veterans and Constitution coaches, the thing that's different about that, you know, when you're teaching young people, it's really cool to see their light bulb come on, and you know that you're sowing into the next generation. But most of the time, 99.9% of the time, that kid that we're training that's in their late teens or their early 20s, you know, they're not going to go home and run for office. They might go home and start a business. Most of them are going to go home and finish up their education or you know, whatever it might be. But not very often do they actually go run for office. Most people that come through our program, just they go become good citizens, but most of them don't run for office. And the young ones don't run until that end up running, don't run for 10, 12, 15 years. There's exceptions to that. I've got one young man in West Virginia that's a state legislator there that ran at 20 years old, and he came to us at 16 and came 4 years in a row and just really, really did well and ended up winning that seat and has served several years in the legislature there and doing a fantastic job. So that's an exception to the rule. But most of the time, when we're pouring into those young people, we know that's a long-term investment. That they're going to come 2, 3, 4 years in a row, and they're going to be good citizens, and they may go make movies or go into business or whatever. But the ones that run for office, that's a generational investment. That's going to be 10, 15, 20, maybe even 30 years before they go run for office. That's the young people. These military veterans and these coaches that are here this week, that's immediate. I mean, they can go home and run for office and will. Some of them will go home from this week after this training and run for office. In fact, there's two guys here right now that did exactly that. One of them came to this training 2 years ago. I ended up going up and doing an event in his home state, said something about him running for office, and he did. And he ran for Senate, and he's now a state senator in his state, and he's back here this week to help train some of the other folks and go through the program again. And then another guy, same thing, in a state legislature, in a state house seat, went home and ran. And we've got stories like that all over the country. That's a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff that most people don't even know about what we're doing at Patriot Academy and what your investment, when you give to American Family Association or you share the radio program with people, what you're doing is you're planting seeds or you're watering seeds that somebody else planted, but you're helping to prepare not only the next generation, but literally the next election. You're preparing for candidates. You're helping equip and train and not only provide the candidate that's going to run, but the campaign manager, the consultant, the people that are going to make the phone calls and help knock on doors with the candidate, all of that. That is what, when you hear me say, and I say it a lot, but you may be wondering, who's he talking about? A lot of times I'll say, help is on the way. The cavalry's coming. What I mean by that is that these investments we're making in these students that come through Patriot Academy, we see the caliber. We see how good they are, and we see what God's doing in their lives. And so we're not shocked at all when they come back a year, 2 years, 3 years later, and they're now a legislator or running a business or making movies or whatever it might be. But this is a cool week to observe that. And so I just want to give a shout out to all of our military veterans out there today and tell you you would enjoy this. And if we may try to do one in the fall or the spring, but for sure be thinking about next summer. come for this exact same week, second or third week of August. We'll do it for the military veterans next summer. I'm actually hoping to do more and more of that. We want to grow that program because there's so many military veterans that are looking for their next mission. They're frustrated with, you know, regular civilian life. They're looking for something that they can really feel like is making a difference and is still serving the country. And sometimes it's not just, you know, military veterans. Sometimes you just reach a point in life. I mean, I'm in my mid-50s now, and I totally understand so many of my friends and peers that are at this point where they're going, okay, I've done all these things for 30 years in my career, you know, but what now? What can I do that is going to be rewarding in these last, you know, 20, 25 years of my work life, and know that it's going to make a difference for the future? You know, I'm super blessed to do what I do, so I get to see the results of the investment in these kids and in the country all the time. But most people don't get to do that. And so they're looking for the next mission. They're looking for something to get involved in. It's especially our friends that served in the military. And especially, I should clarify that, our friends that served in the military and have that biblical worldview and the Christian ethos, the desire to be a servant leader and to follow Christ in everything that they do, and to be a good steward. I mean, all the biblical principles that make a good citizen, being a good steward of what you've been given, making sure that you're treating others the way you want to be treated. I mean, all of those things that make for a good American citizen. If you have someone that was willing to serve in the military and did so, and has that biblical worldview and that servant leadership attitude, boom, man, that's the magic right there. That is gold, and that is what we want to capitalize on. So if you're in the sound of my voice right now and that sounds like something you would be interested in, go to patriotacademy.com. It's too late to come to the one this week, but go to patriotacademy.com. Look at Leadership Congress. That's what we call our legislative simulation. And then look at the Military Veterans Leadership Congress and make plans to come next summer. Or let us know you really want to come now, and we get enough people inquiring about that. We may add another one to the calendar, perhaps this fall. I've actually been thinking a lot about that because I've always thought, you know, summer is when everybody has time to do all this stuff. But I'm finding more and more people say, no, actually, it'd be easier for me to come in the fall or spring when the kids are in school or whatever. Everybody's got different life circumstances. But if you're interested in doing that, go to patriotacademy.com, patriotacademy.com, click on Leadership Congress, and then the Military Veterans Leadership Congress. We'll talk more about this when we come back from the break in a few minutes, but I celebrated last week the enumeration order that President Trump has put out, where he's saying we have to, you know, recalculate the enumeration, what most people call the census. I call it the enumeration because that's what the Constitution says. And it reminds us that it's just enumerating. It's just counting how many people are in an area so that we know where the congressmen should be divvied up around the country. And so that was a big, big victory, something I've called for 15 years. I'm thrilled about it. I mean, I've been really calling for it over the last 6 months, knowing that Trump might be willing to do it and have the backbone to push it through. And he did. And then, it's not enough to have one great victory a week, man. He's got to have like 10 in order for it to be a normal week with the Trump administration. Because then he turns around yesterday and orders the federalizing of the police in Washington, D.C., and all kinds of other things that he's invoking under the 1973 Act that essentially reset the rules for the Washington, D.C. government. And he's doing what I said in my Constitution class 15 years ago should be done, that the Congress, the federal government, now the president's doing it right now, it should be a committee in Congress, but the president's doing the things that he can do without Congress, and then hopefully that will lead Congress to clean up Washington, D.C., to, as he said, take it back. They have let Washington, D.C. turn into an absolute cesspool, crime-ridden everywhere, even in the areas you used to think were safe. And President Trump's just had enough. And so he's taking some of those steps that he can take. Congress needs to step up and say, we're going to do what the Constitution says we're supposed to do, which is have exclusive jurisdiction over all legislative matters, over all matters of Washington, D.C. Congress is supposed to be the one doing that, not a city council in Washington, D.C. Congress essentially delegated that authority. Now, that's happened a couple of times in our history, well, several times, actually, and sometimes they take it back. And this actually, if you want to go down a rabbit trail, this is where that 1871 Incorporation Act comes from, that a lot of people acted like we became a corporation as a nation. That is not true. That's not what that was. It was literally incorporating the city and creating a city charter for Washington, D.C. to be governed by local government instead of by Congress, and then later on took some of that back. And anyway, it's kind of bounced back and forth. And since 1973, though, it's been pretty much the same, and it's just a mess. It's been an abject failure of an experiment because the socialist took over. And if you get bad government socialists running a city, they're going to run it into the ground, just like they did in Detroit and Chicago and San Francisco and all these other places where the left wing took over. And they've certainly done that in D.C. But in this case, you have absolute constitutional authority to take it and clean it up. And I think not just authority, you have a responsibility. This is our national capital. This place ought to be immaculate, ought to be amazing. So I'm thrilled that President Trump did this yesterday. It's a step in the right direction, but a lot more needs to be done on this particular issue. We're going to take a quick break. Love to hear your thoughts. 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, we're going to the Holy Land on a tour in March of 2026. We can't wait to go back. My wife, Allison, and I have been leading these tours for over two decades, nearly three decades. And we are going in March of 2026 to Israel. See all the places that you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. Bethlehem, Jerusalem, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, all of it. We'll be going there. And also my sons, Walker and Wesley Wildman, will be going to Greece on a Footsteps of Paul tour. You can do either the Holy Land trip or the Footsteps of Paul Greece tour, or both. For all the information on these tours, go to wildmangroup.com, W-I-L-D-M-O-N group.com, to get all the information on the 2026 March Israel and Greece tours.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Phone number is 888-589-8840. And just happened to notice this headline as we were talking about military veterans coming to Patriot Academy and getting trained to go back home and run for political office. These are not graduates of Patriot Academy. I wish I could claim Ron DeSantis, greatest governor of our lifetime for sure. But apparently DeSantis, Epic Times says, DeSantis named State Senator Jay Collins as lieutenant governor. Florida is now the only state in the country to have military veterans as both governor and lieutenant governor. And so I don't know what the vacancy was, but anyway, here's what it says about Senator Collins, a former Green Beret. Is representative Florida's District 14, which consists of a large part of Hillsborough County, including most of the city of Tampa, since 2022. So not that long. It says, oh, he was adopted. That's cool. And raised by his grandparents and served more than 20 years in the Army Special Forces. He carried out multiple deployments to Afghanistan, Iraq, and South America, and was awarded the Bronze Star, Legion of Merit, and a Purple Heart. He served 5 years as an active duty Green Beret after he lost his leg due to injury sustained in Afghanistan. Say what? Wow, man. Okay, that's impressive. Now I've got a buddy that's a SEAL that went back in for Desert Storm at like 40. I can't remember if he was 40. He was way too old to be going back into the SEALs, and actually paid for his own surgeries. I can't remember if it was hips or knees. Paid for his own surgeries to get everything fixed and went back in and served for another, I don't know, 6-8 years or whatever it was. I mean, these guys are amazing. That's absolutely incredible. And so here this guy apparently went back and served on active duty 5 years after he lost. How do I not know this guy's story? This is fantastic. Okay, so anyway, new lieutenant governor for Florida. So it looks like previous Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunes stepped down in February after being named the interim president of Florida International University. Okay, so that does happen a lot. I've seen it in Texas especially, a lot of state senators and others, sometimes statewide officials. In fact, our comptroller is becoming, I think, chancellor of Texas A&M University here in Texas, Glenn Hager. So that does happen a lot, and it's actually a pretty good retirement gig for politicians to go be a chancellor of a university or president of a university. I say good for them. I mean, it's good paying, and it allows them to take their leadership skills, and if they've got the right principles, it can be good for that school. And it really is. This is going down a rabbit trail here. It really is true that when those main appointments, like chancellor and president of these universities, can absolutely change the direction of that entire university, for good or bad. And it's amazing how much power they wield. And I've seen it go both ways. And so, I don't know much about Jeanette. Hope that's a good appointment and that's good for Florida. But man, I love the idea of a Green Beret as Lieutenant Governor. Good call, Ron DeSantis. I assume, I should look at the guy's voting record, because it's not a given that because you're a warrior on the battlefield that you're a good legislator or a good leader in the, political world back home on the domestic front. That is not a given at all. Sometimes they turn out not to be very good at all. And then sometimes they turn out to be fantastic, like a Ron DeSantis or, not Marcus, but Morgan Luttrell doing a great job out of Houston. Dan Crenshaw, not so much. And so you just don't know. And so that's why when I said earlier in the previous segment, what I look for and what we want to train at Patriot Academy with our military veteran program, that's just one of our many programs. But that particular program, what I'm looking for is someone that served in the military, not necessarily combat, but served in the military, was willing to give up those years of service. And I also understand, believe me, that some people going to the military just to pay for college, or just because there was nothing else to do. We're looking for the ones that signed up because out of patriotism, they wanted to serve. They wanted that to be a part of their life. And so we want somebody like that. And then also that they have that biblical worldview and that they have some foundation. They don't have to be, a constitutional expert or any of those things. That's what we do. We train them on that kind of stuff. But they just got to have that foundation. And we have seen that be a very, very effective combination. Brian Birdwell, for instance, he's a state senator here in Texas, actually retiring this year. So this will be his last year in the legislature. Phenomenal guy, incredible Constitution adherence by him. He's the guy that was the closest survivor to the point of impact at the Pentagon. The jet, literally flew right by him into the building and covered his entire body in jet fuel. He was burned nearly to non-recognition. Most of his skin came off. I mean, it was a horrible, horrible, horrible thing for him. I forget how many dozens of surgeries he ended up having, but miraculous, God saved him. 4 years of surgeries, just amazing. And he decided to keep giving back and continuing to serve. And he would come to all of our wall builders pastors briefings we'd do in Washington, D.C., and he would speak. And we just love him. And ended up getting him to run for state senate, I guess now it's been 14, 15 years ago. And he's hanging it up this year. But he's just another one of those examples where he had both the biblical and the military service. And it's a great combination for what you want to look for in your public service. It doesn't have to be. Now, look, I didn't serve in the military. It's actually my one regret in life. I've done a lot of stupid things in life that I don't really regret because it, made me who I am and God taught me through those things. But the one regret is that I didn't serve in the military. I almost did after 9/11. Producer Bobby's going to laugh at this. I called up and tried to join up, and they said, you're too old. Well, and I'm like, wait a minute, my buddy that's a Navy SEAL got in. Why can't I? And they're like, yeah, you're just too old and out of shape. So anyway, but I do regret it. And a lot of young people have asked me over the last 4 years, should I serve? And with a woke military and these terrible woke generals that we have now and a president that's just awful, so for the last 4 years I've had to really pause and hesitate how to answer that question and have to say, man, I can't hear God for you, because as much as I'd love for you to be there because we need good people in there, I don't know that I would want my son to go submit to that woke ideology. And I had a general friend of mine, wonderful, wonderful guy out of Virginia that runs a Healthy Veterans organization, and great organization to support, by the way. But he kind of got on to me, man. He said, Rick, listen, if you continue that, then it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, because what you're going to do is none of the good good guys are going to go in, and the left is just going to keep dominating in the military. We have to have people go in and serve that share our values and eventually take it back. And he was right, and here we are. President Trump is turning it around. Pete Hegseth turning it around, and it's not going to happen overnight because you got a lot of people that went in and bought into all that woke nonsense, and you got a clean house, just like what they're doing finally at the FBI. Okay, is anybody else thankful for that? What was it, three of the top dogs that got fired last week? And I've been saying we got to trust the guys in the room, we got to give them some time. I don't know how much is too much time. I don't think 6 months is too much. I don't think it's been too long. I'm certainly not at the point of giving up on the prosecutions and actually putting people in jail. I think they're still headed that direction. And so, it's the same with all of these agencies, frankly. I mean, any part of government where you've got the swamp, the deep state, you got bureaucrats in there that have been there for 20, 30, 40 years, man, and they are entrenched. And so it takes a lot to clean house and get them out of there. And the military, of course, you're dealing with the exact same thing. So, all right, let's go back to the headlines and a couple of those things that have happened in the last few days. President Trump, of course, still just racking up the wins, man. This peace treaty yesterday, I mean, I can't keep up, people. I'm telling you, I cannot keep up. I think this is the seventh or the eighth major peace deal that he's made. And some of these conflicts I didn't even know were going on, okay? I hate to admit my ignorance, but I'm juggling a lot, okay? And I can't keep up with every headline. I am amazed at what President Trump has been able to do. This is a guy that must not sleep at all and clearly has a team around him that is extremely effective, because you don't accomplish this many major items even as President of the United States without having a team that's out there, you know, basically doing the blocking and tackling and getting the deal close to being done, knowing that you are as good as he actually is, so that both parties, whether it's some of these, you know, military conflicts or it's a trade conflict or a union conflict, whatever it is, the parties know, everybody knows at this point that Donald Trump means business and that he has an uncanny ability to sit down with both sides and be able to see where they're coming from, acknowledge it, even if I would say they're the evil person in a conflict. He's able to say, okay, all right, but how do we get the deal done? He's going to get the deal done. And I think he's practical enough to know you're not going to eradicate evil. And in some of these cases, you can't eradicate the bad players or the aggressor nation or whatever it might be. In one of them, you can eradicate Hamas, and you should eradicate Hamas, and Israel should take over Gaza completely. Right, I am 100% for that, because the people in Gaza will benefit from that. They will end up with an education system that actually works and doesn't indoctrinate their children to want to kill Jews. They will end up with an economy and housing and all of those things in society that are good for society, just like in Israel, where regardless of whether you're Arab or Jewish or whatever, you get to participate in a free society. So it's good for Gaza if Netanyahu follows through and takes over the whole thing and wipes Hamas out. So in that case, yes, you can actually annihilate one of the two parties, because Hamas itself, if annihilated, gives you the chance to do with the people in Gaza what we did with Japan and Germany, and go in and actually rebuild those societies with instead of hate-filled, you know, indoctrination and cult-like mentality and a death culture, you rebuild those societies with freedom and prosperity and economics that works and all of those things. So anyway, Donald Trump getting these peace deals, everybody should continue to be amazed. I know everybody keeps saying, well, why doesn't he get the Nobel Peace Prize? He needs to be nominated. It's obviously not fair that he doesn't get it. And I hear all that. I agree with all that. I guess I'm more skeptical, or not skeptical, I'm more jaded on that, where I've so discounted the Nobel Peace Prize because of how political it became and how absurd some of their awards have been, that it's almost like if they give it to Trump at this point, it would be so begrudgingly that I guess it'd be a victory for him. So, I mean, maybe it'd be good, but I'm just not hung up on it. I'm not like, it's not a big deal. I think the results are a big deal. The fact that this guy's going to be able to, you know, essentially close out the year 4 months from now and check off more peace deals, more accomplishments in 1 year than probably any other president's 4 or 8 years. I think that's what we're going to have to do that. I'm going to work on that. If nobody else does it, I'm going to work on the complete list of victories, not from his first term. Like we won't even count those. We will look at just the victories, major accomplishment that any president would want to have a headline about and want to brag about to the country. This guy is going to have a list so long from just 2025 that I think it will outperform even, you know, my favorite president of the last century, Ronald Reagan, outperform, you know, Abraham Lincoln in the, what I guess he ended up with 5 years total, right? First term. And then was it 1 year into his term that he was assassinated? Obviously less than eight. You know, George Washington, the greatest American maybe to ever live, and still ranks as my number one president. But man, Donald Trump just may. He definitely is going to have a list of accomplishments greater. But Washington is just the indispensable man, right? So he didn't have the same number of conflicts, and certainly didn't have the same damage to the culture that Donald Trump has had to deal with. So even after defeating the British and having to create a new culture, the American culture, it wasn't that different from the, you know, mother country. I mean, it was different, but not that different. I think we are more different today in rebuilding America. There's more of a disparity between what the left was turning America into in the last 4 years and what we will now rebuild in terms of actual American values and liberty. That chasm is greater than the difference between the British Empire and the American revolutionaries. And so that's why I think Trump's job as president is actually harder than what George Washington had to deal with. And so how do you rank that, right? How do you figure out who to make your number one at that point? I'm excited to be alive right now. If you are not pinching yourself and saying, Lord, thank you for letting me live in amazing times. You know, Ronald Reagan, actually, since we mentioned him, had a great quote about, I'm glad I don't live in pale and timid times. I'm glad I live at a time. This is not an exact quote, but he said, basically, I'm glad I live at a time where what we're doing will make a difference. We're not just marking time. And I feel like that. I feel like, wow, these are not pale and timid times at all. They're not any longer tyrannical times. It's truly a rebuilding season. It's truly a renaissance rebirth of liberty that my ancestors may not see. They may not have the opportunity to do what we're doing right now. Hopefully we're going to do it so well that they get the benefit of it, but they're not going to have to go through, Lord willing, not go through the same near collapse of culture that we almost experienced, and then have to rebuild from there. But for us, it's kind of a high, to be honest with you. It's a really cool place to be in history. It's an amazing inflection point in history. And so we need to count our blessings and recognize the moment that is before us, not just the president. I mean, I know some people, it's all about President Trump. I know I'm thankful for him, and I'm praising the victories and the peace deals. But it's the culture movement. It's the groundwork that was laid by Don Wildman and Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and frankly Ronald Reagan and you know, a lot of these people that just dug in the trenches for years and years and years and tried to bring us back to good biblical founding principles, but it just kept slipping, slouching towards Gomorrah, as Robert Bork said all those years ago. But man, we had some great champions, D. James Kennedy, these guys that just held on and they wouldn't let go. And here we are getting to live the benefit of it and continue the fight, of course. We've got a lot of work to do, but what a great time to be on the front lines. What a great time to be used by God to do things that really matter. Glad we don't live in pale and timid times. What a wonderful time to be alive. All right, quick break. We'll be right back, folks. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. Phone number is 888-589-8840.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Greener. I'm Rick Greener, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me on this Tuesday. As I was mentioning earlier, we got a great group of folks here at the Patriot Academy campus doing our Military Veterans and Constitution Coach Congress, which means they're doing a legislative simulation. And so I'll be headed up there in a little bit to conduct the House floor session with them. But a few more minutes with you. If you want to call in, 888-589-8840 with comments, questions, insults. Try to get to those phone calls since we're in our last segment. But I was noticing one other headline I have to mention. Trump threatens major lawsuit against Powell over ballooning federal building renovation costs. So here's where we are, folks. Powell should have already resigned. I mean, you know, first of all, the Fed needs a total, at least an audit, at least more transparency, but maybe get rid of them completely. I would be fine with that and get this back under the auspices of Congress and become more market-driven instead of these handful of bankers behind the scenes getting to decide what interest rates are going to be. You know, I fully get and understand you have to monitor and somewhat control the money supply and how much is out there in order to deal with inflation and those kind of things. And you have to have some sort of a ability to you know, control what the lending rate's going to be for those banks. But it's so micromanaged at this point and so manipulated by these guys that the free market doesn't have as much of an impact on it as it should. And so I don't know where it necessarily, you know, I'm not an expert on this at all. I was a finance major, but still, I don't know that the interest rates would come down that much if the Fed was out of the picture, or, you know, if Powell was not blocking that from happening. I think the market probably would bring it down. But this, we have to recognize that it's not just an interest rate problem. We cannot escape the consequence of our actions. And if we spend $10 trillion extra dollars, if the federal government just prints and throws out there $10 trillion extra dollars for COVID and actually pays people to stay at home and not work, it doesn't take a finance major to figure out that's going to cause major inflation, and that's going to cause everything to become more expensive. And with that extra money on the market, it's going to you're going to have fewer people if they're getting paid to stay at home, fewer people producing, so you have fewer products, but yet you have all this additional money to buy products with, and so obviously the prices are going to go up. So everything went up. I was reading one article the other day. I should have pulled it up, but I forget the person that wrote it. But they were talking about, they literally took a picture of their, I don't remember if it was Amazon, Walmart. No, it was a Walmart cart. Their Walmart, online Walmart cart, and they compared 4 or 5 years ago their shopping cart, the price, and then refilled the cart with the exact same items, and the difference was, it was over a 200% increase in terms of what they were paying. And so that's a massive inflation rate in that few years. So that's part of the problem. So we can't blame everything on Jerome Powell, but I do think it just makes sense that at least a quarter point or two should have been cut in the last 6 months. And, you know, Trump's, of course, looking at multiple things. He knows that an interest rate cut will help boost the economy and would have more home sales and all of those things that would be good. Powell is obviously concerned that if you do that, if you cut the interest rate, you spur the economy too much, it gets too hot, and then inflation kicks back up. But I'm just not convinced that anyone, including 12 governors of the Fed or whoever, is smart enough to figure out what that rate ought to be. I just don't buy that anybody can get that down to an exact science. I don't think that's possible. I think that's the whole difference between a controlled economy and a free market economy. A free market economy says 350 million people making individual decisions in the chaos of the market, or what Adam Smith called the invisible hand, that will produce a better result than a handful of people behind the scenes micromanaging the price of a product, how much of a product should be out there. And money is, in a way, product. Lending is, in a way, a product. That you buy or sell money. You buy a loan by paying interest for that money to be able to get the car or the house or the, you know, machine or whatever it is that you're buying. And so the micromanaging control of the product of lending that the Fed exercises, I just don't trust that anybody's smart enough to be making those decisions, and that the market and the chaos of the market would be better. Meaning, like, you know, banks and others would choose on their own. There would be more of a market-driven interest rate instead of the Fed picking what that lending rate's going to be. Go back to the gold standard so that you're tying it to something that is tangible instead of these nefarious, you know, secret meetings being the ones to make the decision. So I'm sure somebody out there is listening and, you know, has more degrees than a thermometer but can't find their way to their car in the morning. And they are probably thinking, man, this Rick Green's, you know, he's just doesn't understand economics, doesn't understand the need for the Fed and why all these things, why you need these smart people in the back room figuring this stuff out. And you might be right. Maybe I'm just too simple. But I prefer to err on the side of freedom and free enterprise and letting the multitude of decisions determine the interest rate instead of this small handful of people. Okay, so that's the Jerome Powell, Donald Trump conflict. And Trump, of course, also wants to save on the debt. So if you got $37 trillion in debt, you can imagine if the interest rate comes down even a quarter point, it saves hundreds of billions of dollars. If it comes down a whole point or 2 points like it should, how much more it saves. So President Trump's looking at that and knowing that that would help with the debt and getting the debt down, which is good for him and good for the country. And he knows that the debt is a significant threat to the country. And then he's also looking at just the growth in the market that is caused, like we said earlier, with the growth in the housing market whenever you have when you have those interest rate cuts. And I'm a little biased on this. I will admit my bias. I'm transparent here. We've moved to the Patriot Academy campus in Fredericksburg, and I need to sell my house in Dripping Springs. So I want the interest rates to come down because it'll sell faster and for more. So anyway, so yes, I am telling you my bias right here. My personal opinion on this is lower the interest rates so I can sell my house. There you go. Now you know. But here's what I was laughing about in the article. So because Trump can't, you know, he's essentially not laid down his arms in terms of firing Jerome Powell. I think maybe he's, you know, come to terms with the fact that Powell's not going to resign no matter how many times Trump asks him. So now Trump is threatening a lawsuit against Powell because the fixer-upper that they're doing for the Federal Reserve buildings is turning into this massive now $3 billion renovation. Now, according to President Trump, not that he would ever exaggerate. That was a joke. According to President Trump, it says President Trump's latest round of criticism of Powell alleged that the renovations of the Federal Reserve building, quote, should have been a $50 million fix-up, unquote, and instead has ballooned to a $3 billion renovation. And then President Trump says, Jerome Too Late Powell, he's always coming up with these names for everybody, Jerome Too Late Powell must now lower the rate. So anyway, this is definitely you know, typical Trump. I don't know if it'll work, but man, the guy's pulled off so many miracles. I've lost count, can't keep up, and you know, maybe he'll pull this one off as well. But I think, you know, I think there's no doubt that an interest rate cut would be good for everybody. So all right, let's think about what we're going to do the rest of this week, because I've got all these military veterans here and I've got these Constitution coaches here, and I want you to be part of this. I want you to become a part of rebuilding liberty. Don't just expect these people we're training to go solve all the problems for us. You know, a lot of people thought, oh, President Trump got elected, I don't have to do anything, he's going to save the world. He's doing a lot of great things, but what did I say from the very beginning? All the way back in January, we go back and pull the recordings of my programs, and I said over and over and over again, President Donald Trump, with all the great stuff he's going to do, is doing nothing but providing air cover so that we can then actually rebuild liberty at the local level. And what I meant by that is, yes, these things are good, what he's doing, but the federal government was never intended to be the solution to all of our problems. And what President Trump is doing is actually trying to get the federal government out of our way and trying to make it possible for us to govern ourselves. Self-government is what it's really all about. And so he's trying to make it possible for us to do the right thing at the local level and rebuild the real pillars of society at the local level. And I'll give you an example of that. I was doing the 250th thing yesterday with the White House. They have this essentially this group that they've put together of several hundred organizations from across the nation that are you know, really going to hopefully make the most of the 250th. This is something we've talked about for years and years and years and been looking forward to it and been preparing for it. It's why we're doing our Rebuilding Liberty course, and it's all built around celebrating the 250th and making sure that we build in a good, strong way for years and years and years. But the group yesterday that the White House had pulled together have so many programs that are going to happen in the next year. It's phenomenal. I mean, it's going to be red, white, and blue everywhere. Patriotism is on the comeback. I mean, this is to hear the things that the other organizations were saying. I mean, they're saying the same things that we've said for years, but our name is Patriot Academy. I mean, that's what we do. That's what we're all about, patriotism. We're all about the family and faith being involved, American Family Association, right? I mean, wall builders, rebuilding the walls, rebuilding the foundations. All these organizations, we've been about this forever. But now you've got all these other groups that are now picking up the same rhetoric, and they are focused on the exact same things. And here's the best part. The president, as I said, gives us air cover so we can rebuild at the local level. The president and the White House, the emphasis yesterday on faith, the emphasis on thanking God, the emphasis on finding moments of faith in our history that we can highlight and talk about, the emphasis on the goodness of America that comes from the biblical foundation, that's what makes us great in the first place. I can't tell you how many things were said in this meeting yesterday that gave me so much hope and courage about the type of leadership that President Trump is providing and the type of staff that he has put in place at the White House. Now, I'm again biased because I got, you know, Patriot Academy grads that are working there and are part of that, and I'm super proud of them, and they certainly bring a faith element. But man, it's a ton of people that never came through Patriot Academy that I didn't know, that I just am beginning to meet and hear from. And It's like I'm reading out of a David Barton book, you know, or an old Don Wildman speech, and it's coming from the White House. So if you think this is just a bunch of, you know, executive orders and pardons and remaking of some federal agencies, and it's not. It's cultural renewal. It's quite literally putting a finger on the most important pillars that make a society work. I think back to George Washington's quote about religion and morality are indispensable supports. So what he's saying is those are pillars that if you remove them, the whole thing will crumble. And what President Trump's doing with the 250th and frankly with the faith office and all the areas that he's emphasizing religion and morality is he's essentially heeding the warning of George Washington. So this has kind of turned into a theme today. From George Washington to Donald Trump, some of their similarities, why one, you know, remains ranked the best president in history, but why the other, Donald Trump, is potentially going to move into that slot when this is all said and done. President Trump is doing what George Washington said would be necessary for the culture to survive, for the nation that he helped build after those 8 years as president. He said religion and morality are indispensable supports of political prosperity. In other words, not personal, but political. In other words, as a nation, religion and morality are indispensable for the nation to prosper, for our politics to prosper, which doesn't mean the politicians are making money. If our politics prosper, what George Washington was saying is that our government and our society and our system is prospering. We're remaining free. We're, as a nation, becoming prosperous. We're a place that people want to come to. You know, my typical country boy test. Is the nation doing well? Well, are people trying to get in or are people trying to get out? That's the question of whether or not, that's the test of how, whether or not a nation is worth defending and protecting. And so Donald Trump is basically, I don't even know if he knows that quote from Washington, frankly. I know these people in the White House know it because we've shared it with them and I've heard some of them repeat it. But he is doing what George Washington said was important. He's bringing back religion and morality. You talk about not having the indispensable supports. Why do you think we've had so much crime? Why do you think we've ended up with politicians that would sell out our country and open our borders and do all the things that they've done as long as they made their millions of dollars? Because of a lack of religion and morality. That's how you get in that mess. And we could have gone down the road of complete destruction. But now we've got this window of opportunity, and President Trump has figured out that those indispensable supports of religion and morality must be restored if we're going to make it. And so what I saw yesterday in this meeting with these hundreds of organizations was an absolute emphasis on religion and morality, bringing faith back into the system, in education, in our public schools, our private schools, our homeschooling, in our celebrations, in our civic ritual, which is what this whole 250th thing is going to be, is 1 year of civic ritual and reminding ourselves who we are and what we're all about. And the fact that they're emphasizing faith like they are, friends, take advantage of this. Be encouraged. Know that these are the building blocks. If you're watching online, I'm holding up my book. Rebuilding Liberty, what have I got on the front of the book? Bricks. You rebuild the wall with the right bricks. And what are they? Things like truth, the creator, all those wonderful phrases out of the Declaration of Independence. That's religion and morality being inserted into the culture. That's the right bricks with which to rebuild. We've got a White House that's pushing that in every single one of those programs. So be encouraged. Thanks so much for listening today. Walker will be with you tomorrow. I'll be back with you on Thursday. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.